rock this thing.
Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to AMC Press & Co. We welcome you whether you're on planet Mars. This means aliens can hear us. Brilliant! We wondered where those came from. We were all talking about it in the office. Short notes. Very quickly before we begin, we are an affiliate of Blog Talk Radio Network. We would like to express the views and opinions of the hosts are not shared with any affiliates or sponsors. View discretion is advised.
Ah, yes. And welcome to another edition of AMC Press & Co. with my co-host Johnny. Allison is not in tonight, and she will return on Monday. She's under the weather. Well, as we said, welcome to this edition of AMC Press number 479. AMC Press 479. Jesus Christ, where are we going? And where have we come from? Anyway, this episode is entitled The Fried Net Neutrality Autistic Cure. You say the fried what, and what?
What now, what?
Are they fried autistic children? What? No! They haven't fried autistic children. They just have come up with this cure, which we'll touch on later in the program. We talk about Social Security and how Social Security and they're going to the internet. We say, why? And then Fark Founder wants to run for governor. We say, cool beans for that. Then we also see the hiring of a new liaison at the White House. And say what? Rand Paul wants to save the internet? Really now, you fucked up bastard.
You don't say.
You don't say. And we close up with a debate. Is autism real? More coming up. Oh, and
stay tuned.
Right. For us. This is just us. Right. Where can you find us? Well, you can find us, more of us, on itsmyyours.com/AMCFresh and shop for us on Zazzle, keyword AMCFresh pop-up shop, and you can contact us on Facebook, we'd love to hear from you, and on Twitter, we'd love to hear from you there, and our handles are AMCFresh31 and AMCFreshNews. Now, on with the show. Yes, as we said in the intro just a few seconds ago, Social Security is going online. We don't know why. We assume it's because they have, well, more than 180,000 people that they serve every day and about 20,000 employees that work in these offices. Now, for a long time, it's been stated that basically, for lack of another word, you have to go face to face, don't you? Don't need to the Social Security Administration state your claim, right? now more than 15 years ago, I had to do the same thing, except in New York City, where basically I had to stand in front of a judge, admit that I was disabled, and the judge said, "Really, you're disabled?" And I took one look at my parents and say, "See, even he doesn't understand." Now, the reason why they're going on, it's going online, is because of the fact that they said they wanted to have stuff in more of an efficient manner. What do you think about this, Johnny?
Probably wants to get like the rest of the world.
Well, I mean, it wants to be automated. I get that. But automated doesn't always scream really good. You know? I mean, last time I checked, and this is why I wish Allison was here, but he's not. You know, last time I checked, you had to march down to the Social Security office, explain your plight, and then they would actually deliver you the answer. There and then. You know, quick and speedy with Smith & Wesson smoking gun. But yet, they're saying that the others, including the American Federation of Government Employees, saying that applying for disability, whether deciding to begin to collect retirement or make things more complicated than buying a house or an airline ticket, and union leaders are concerned that the push towards online will lead the inevitability of reductions in the agency's roughly 250 field offices in the country. But, you know, the fact that 28,000 employees work in those offices and nearly 180,000 people visit them every day, they're complicated legal decisions. It's not like depositing a check at a bank. But yet, this comes from the Social Security Works, a Washington-based coalition that advocates for beneficiaries, that we should beginning open new field offices, and given the number of people who are reaching retirement age. This is a good thing and a bad thing, okay? Johnny, why do you think it's a bad thing?
Why do I think this might be a bad idea?
Mm-hmm.
Because some things are not meant to be, like, over the internet.
What is not meant to be over the internet?
Then if you have, like, a face-to-face question, like, who knows who's on the other side of that fiber optic wire?
An alien?
Do they even know who you are?
Well, yeah, and it's almost like, you know, the simple thing of basically the simplistic thing of basically kicking Social Security as we know it to the ground in the fact that more than half of its field offices will close. This is the thing, eventually, this is the thing that we wanted to see happen. But we're not about to make it a thing where, in the future, right, everything's going to be automatic. Why shouldn't Social Security? Well, for a number of reasons. Number one, 1.8 billion people depend on it. Sorry, million people. And they get checks. Let's just take this into consideration here. Your parents probably get checks, right, Johnny?
Yeah.
Right?
I think I still get checks, even though it's direct deposit, you know.
Right. You still get checks, right? And it's direct deposit, so they have no choice but to say, okay, now what in God's name is going on? Because for older Americans, they're going to say, wait a second, we get to access our Social Security via the internet. What is that? We're used to going to offices, right? Right. But if you're so used to going to an office and dealing with face-to-face, then what are we supposed to do now? You know? But yet, if you go online, it's a lot easier. See, that's the debate I'm hedging my bets on. I mean, if you went online for Social Security, why shouldn't it be the same thing? I mean, I would rather deal in I would rather deal with it face to face, but I'm worried about whether things will still be the same. You know, what will happen to the checks? Will they become electronic? Will people try to hack into the system? No. That's another thing. I mean, last year, Social Security procedures for the Senate on the Aging Committee issued a scathing report last year of Social Security's procedures for closing field offices, and Congress ultimately approved the requirements, making it more difficult for the agency to close an office. Okay? So, if the offices remain the same, then what are they doing for all those beneficiaries who have checks? Right? Teachers, governors, students, disabled people like us. You know, and then the unions are getting all up in arms because of the fact that the support for Social Security Administration and the goal of reducing a backlog and improving the workplace efficiency. I understand this. Improve the efficiency. But don't take away the human contact. Right?
Right.
I mean, why take away human contact? Because Social Security has nearly 64,000 employees and including more than 11,000 in Maryland, making it one of the largest federal employees in the state. Okay? If they do this, it's going to benefit us, but not benefit other people. You know? And the other thing about it is also, you know, it's an inferior process between everybody that's even in Social Security, too. They're beginning to rehaul the system. you know, making it 10 times harder for anybody's room to, you know, and in the plan, right, is that the union represents about 1,600 employees involved with deciding whether the applicants are eligible for disability payments, and the effort has resulted in one huge backlog, right? So if they streamline this process, it would kind of be rather instantaneous. You wouldn't have to go in front of anybody. You'd have to go online. I don't know whether they would do the face-to-face combat, that would be really funny. Face-to-face contact via Skype or something like that.
Yes.
I mean, how do you think it would work? Johnny.
I can see a Skype.
I mean, I can see Skype too. But I can see a lot of trouble between the Social Security Administration and its patrons, the 60 million beneficiaries that have to not wait in lines anymore. You know, that's what I see. I mean, if we have 66,000 people, right? Then how in the world are we going to pay all of them? And that's the government's problem. Is how in the world are we going to pay for all of them, and how are we going to keep the cycle going? That is... the question. That's the question, right?
I don't. How are we gonna make this work?
How are we going to make this work? Well, we will keep you abreast and informed in other episodes, future episodes, if this actually pans out and what people have to say with it worldwide, not just from the U.S., because we believe that there's going to be more stuff. And the reason why we're not satirizing this is because it's pretty damn important to a lot of Americans. You can't satirize money. I mean, it just wouldn't be right. Then in other news, as we mentioned, Drew Curtis of Falk, and if you don't know what Falk is, I think it's not that you don't have a brain, it's that you probably haven't noticed it until now because of all the headlines that are collected around the internet. There is one website that we use. It's called Falk.com. Falk.com displays the good, the bad, the ugly, the weird, the insane, the just plain stupid, and other things. The founder, Drew Curtis, is running for Kentucky governor. Why? Because he believes that he has a chance of running. Isn't that right, John?
It's right.
But yet, his website is famous for ragging on politics and the media. And he's not kidding. He files the paperwork, and his wife, Heather, has widely acknowledged that the brains behind Falk is in line with his to be lieutenant governor. To be sure that if it was easy to come up with the longest reasons of my arm that would be the reason why the 40-year-old Lexington entrepreneur would be the worst candidate on earth. He freely admits to saying that he's a mass, the masses are morons, and of course, on an, he might be right on election night. And moreover, the public debauchery of his party might make the late Hunter S. Thompson, the swine of a generation of swine, indeed blush. But yet, here's his thoughts on why he actually might be an excellent politician. One, he built a viable business. Two, because Falk has been out since the late 90s, and he continues to be one of the top social media sites in the world, he's a visionary. Falk came before Reddit and Twitter alike, and basically anticipated the role of social media would one day play. For this reason alone, he should be elected or excused or both. Or maybe executed. You know, he's sorting communities. Falk is one of the many websites that emerged in the late 90s web boom when most others failed, and Falk has survived because Curtis has cultivated a community of commentators on social media sites that have surpassed Falk. But longtime Falkers, like Johnny, you're a Falker.
Yes.
Right? You follow his stuff, right?
I'm a mother Falker.
Ooh,
a mother Falker. Yeah.
Mother Falker,
oh my.
Yeah.
Oh my. But anyway, so one of the many websites, I mean, and then he brings people together. He meets up with people, meet up with Curtis in New York City, and you'll find him at a bar with media across the political spectrum, and one of the few events where you'll see HuffPost editors throwback drinks with Fox News execs, and gladly name some of those Fox staffers, and they're willing to admit they've hung out with lowlifes like him. But then you also have every other candidate. Curtis has written a book bashing the media and casting himself as a voice of reason. His 2017, it's not news, it's Falk.
It's
and how mass media, that's the title. How it's not news, it's Falk. And how mass media has tried to pass off the crap as news has more guns, gravy, grits, and God than Mike Huckabee's vanity project, and does a much better job of explaining why America is flushing itself down the toilet of nonsense. And he loves his wife. Okay, and so fucking what? Everybody loves their wife or their girlfriend or their significant other or every who makes their day. Who do you want to come home to? Your wife, right? Or your girlfriend, right? Or your dog, who's not your girlfriend. But anyway,
Or your husband, if you go that way.
Or your husband, or your wife. You know.
2015.
Exactly. You don't want to do that. Or you want to do that. You want to be...
You
want
to go home to the one you love.
You want to come home to the one you love, and then some.
Yeah.
You know, he's saying that he's happy with being a citizen of Kentucky, and that he admits to have deserving that she deserves the top slot instead of him. If you're saying that she deserves a top slot, then why the fuck are you running? You know, why the hell are you running? And then he says he drinks plenty of bourbon. Okay.
He drinks a lot of bourbon as I eat a lot of cheesesteaks.
Right. I mean, is he going to be the guy sitting on the porch saying, screw the country?
And yeah, just,
you know.
Let me have my cheesesteak.
Let me have my cheesesteak, screw the country, and pass the bourbon. Thank you. You know, but then Curtis actually claims that he stands for something and describes him as a citizen candidate. Okay. What is a citizen candidate? Somebody who opposes money in politics and the lethargy of both parties and stands for common sense, data-driven solutions, and net neutrality. My God, we should have known! We should have known! And of course, that the fact that Fox pumps a huge amount of traffic to the HuffPost weird news has nothing to do with the fact that our enthusiastic support for the only man qualified to take the Bluegrass State to new heights of greatness. You know, why even bother? I mean, HuffPost is, we're honest, we're impartial, we're the media, we're so convinced that we can't even say name anyone else who's running. Why would you even bother? Vote Fox. Well, fucking holy cow. You know, seriously. And then this just in. Retired FBI agent is accused of lying in the Whitey Bulger trial. Well, that's nothing new. Anyway, we'll report on that tomorrow. The thing is why do you think there are such weird candidates, Johnny? I mean,
I don't know.
Yeah,
like, leave there.
It's not because we did it, right?
A lot make you say, like, really?
Yeah, I mean, we just go, you're not serious, right? You're absolutely not serious.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you way back in the 1950s.
Exactly. I can't hear you among the race riots and the white people. Oh, wait a second. Sorry, too many white people. Too many white people kind of thing. Sorry. But yet, I think the only thing between what stands in his way is they're going to ask him, oh, are you going to ever stop drinking? You know, that's got to be a question on people's minds, isn't it? Shouldn't it be?
Yeah. Really. It's like we need to go forward, not backwards.
Right. Go forward, not backward, but if we went forward enough, maybe we just might break the rules.
Yeah.
And that's what that's what he's trying to do. I mean, how many it's kind of interesting in the fact that in FARC, right, you can't go on that site, right, with I think you can't go on that site without, you know, knowing about stuff. Meaning, you know, it's not just the headlines.
Right?
But yet, then you have this kind of thing where it's all sectioned off, like weird, stupid, this, that, and the other thing. I mean, it's a clever site to give such stuff, right? But let's just say, how much stuff, I mean, can you put on a site that people are willing to read? I mean, what do you think, Johnny? How much stuff can you put on the site?
And there's some strange stuff on there, like,
you know, I would think that you kind of I think that you kind of it's a hodgepodge for everyone, right? Right?
Right.
It's a hodgepodge for everyone, but it's also a hodgepodge of stuff, you know, as it relates.
Something that makes you laugh, but yet it's effective.
Right. I mean, it's something that makes you laugh and is effective, which is great, which is what we try to do every night. And I believe we're doing it successfully. But, let's move on, shall we? We have other ground to cover. We have the new disability liaison, right?
Yes.
And the new disability liaison in the White House, right? When last we heard of this disability liaison, we thought, okay, you know, that Maria Town took over this week as Associate Director of the White House's Office of Public Engagement and in the post, she will focus on uncovering the needs of people with disability in Obama administration activities. The new hire comes just over a month after Karen McKenzie-Williams left the role and Williams was in the position temporarily and since has returned to the U.S. Department of Labor, where she was stationed previously. Town, who has cerebral palsy, is a full-time permanent hire, said the White House. And also, before joining the present staff, Town worked as an advisor to Labor's Office of Disability and Employment Policy. In that role, she focused on improving employment among the youth and youth adults with disabilities, and Maria's track record is bolstering with people with youth with disabilities and as they transition into workforce, and her skill demonstrated her crafting career development opportunities in classroom and bolstering leadership with young people with disabilities and building opportunities for inclusive volunteerism, which will serve as existing efforts on the White House's behalf of the Americans with Disabilities Act as well, says Rebecca Coakley, the Executive Director on the National Council of Disability, a federal agency that advises the President on disability issues. Which is a great thing, because the more people that they get in the White House that are disabled, then the better off we will be as a country. I believe. Because of the fact that you have so many people who are not getting the assistance that they need. That's the thing. And I'm looking on their website right now that there's never been so many briefs that I've ever seen on, you know, everything from employment to civil rights to cultural diversity to education to emergency management to employment to financial assistance and incentives to technology and transportation and youth perspectives. So basically anything you want to do, you can go and do, which is brilliant. I mean, what do you think about this, Johnny? Yeah, Johnny, what do you think about this?
Well, I think it's great. I think it's great that we're seeing more people with disabilities in the White House and all.
I mean, the fact is that because of Barack Obama, there are a lot of things that are changing for people with disabilities, including myself and everybody on this program. Everybody is associated with this program. There's more stuff that we get to do, you know. And getting to have is a great thing, you know. Getting to have something that we have long been subject to is, or not subject to, but long been trapped in is a great thing, you know. It's a great thing to have. Now, then, because if we don't have more of it, right, then the next president, whoever is running, right, whether it be Hillary Clinton, whether it be Ron Paul, whether it be other people, you're not going to see much. You're going to see change, but you're not going to see change happen this fast, I think. And then, speaking of Ron Paul, right? Or Rand Paul. He wants to fix and kill net neutrality. He's actually come up with a plan. Johnny, what happened? I mean, he may be scatterbrained, right?
I mean, he is something else, that's for sure.
I mean, what's your opinion on him? Right off the bat, what do you think?
I think he's a nut.
In what way?
What? He wants to send everything back 50 years.
Right, but at least he's trying to actually save the internet his way, but still save the internet. The long short story is that Rand Paul wanted to ruin the internet by repealing the new and widely loved net neutrality laws for federal the FCC and ruin the internet. But it's exactly the same thing that what many very smart internet experts will say is a strong net neutrality laws aren't implemented. Senator Paul has now introduced a new bill that intends to push it through Congress that will help a nebulous law that removes procedural hurdles when trying to repeal new regulations. I mean, that to me is a bunch of malarkey. Why go fixing things that aren't broken, number one? Number two, are you swinging around just because of that set? Do you want to swing your stuff around?
Of course, this guy just...
I mean, it's misguided, is what it is. I mean, it's just one of those things that you just go, what are you doing? And why are you doing this?
What?
You know? Why are you taking on this responsibility? You know, because of the fact that, it classifies as broadband, okay? But are we going to go back to broadband, or are we going to go back to the modem age? That would be great. Tons of black boxes everywhere. Your desk, black box.
Even though we're in the broadband age right now, why not?
Right.
Let's take it back.
Why not? Let's go back to the modem.
Let's go back. Let's go back to the days of dial-up.
Right. Let's go back to hooking up old phones, right?
Let's
our phones that had modems, right?
Let's
and use the same thing.
Let's take it back to a 56K connection.
Dial-up modem speed, right?
Yeah, pretty much. In layman terms, yeah.
I simply don't want the government regulating the internet. Understandable, Ron Rand, but, you know, they are so, let's take this back to 1985 when the first dot-coms were registered, or maybe 1960 when the dang government helped invent the internet. Okay? I mean, I think there's very little that we can say on this. There's very little. I mean, you're missing the point if you're thinking that you're going back to that. It's like a presidential candidate saying $15 of a piece of plastic with a name on it will prevent the NSA from spying on you. Which is exactly what Ron Paul did earlier this month by saying this way. And it's just misinformation, folks. It's just dumb and it's dangerous.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you think? It is dumb and dangerous, isn't it?
Exactly.
I don't know of
if
I don't know
they want to block information that they might seem offensive to them.
Right.
Like up. I don't agree with you. Block.
Right. I mean,
it shouldn't be that way. That's what makes the internet so great.
Yeah. I don't know. I just don't know. I have a... I have serious doubts on this. But... what do you know? It is almost time to go, isn't it? Jeez, where has the hour gone, right? But then... I think what we'll do now is very quickly have a very quick debate on this.
Okay, we're going to get to one last little story.
We have one last story. What if there was no autism epidemic? Okay. I have trouble with this. Don't you?
Yeah. I mean, it's not all in our heads.
No, that is like saying ADHD.
You don't have cancer.
Right. You don't have cancer, but your hair is falling out, your cells are decreasing, and you're dying. Yeah. What?
What?
What the fuck are you on? Tell us so that we may live. Really? That the Center for Disease Prevention in March 2014, that the report showed that there's a 30% rise in ASD, autism spectrum disorders, and then over a span of a few years that triggered a widespread concern, which has one simple question. What is the cause? Well, the cause is that you don't have a cure, you idiot. You know, if we're attempting to poke holes in this, we're not going to poke them well, are we?
Nope.
No, we're not going to. I mean, they're looking at data which concludes that the authors conclude that it's something other than an actual increase of the number of children. This is in Sweden, okay? That when parents were contacted directly to ask about symptoms associated with autism, the number of children who met the cutoff for an ASD remained stable over a 10-year period under investigation. Over the same period, right, the number of diagnoses with ASD registered a data bank, which is in alphanumerical code given by a provider, increased steadily. And this is in, however, they say, symptoms are classified and defined and will be no less important than for those with special needs to get them services, to get them help. Then why are you... My only question here, and Johnny, I mean, do you have a question? Because I certainly do. And Allison would certainly. Which is, why did you want to put this in the first place?
Yeah.
You know?
It's probably going down.
What is going down?
Probably the diagnosis of autism is probably going down because we know a lot more.
Well, we know a lot more, but that doesn't mean that there's a cure.
I'm not saying it's a cure. I'm saying the diagnosis...
No. Yeah, the diagnosis.
Back in the early 90s.
Yeah.
I've seen the change.
What do you mean you've seen the change?
There's so much more services out there now as compared to 20 years ago.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's like ADHD. It's the same thing. Like, there's more stuff coming. People with learning disabilities, like myself, yourself, Allison, Elaine in Australia, and other people who are on this podcast. We're on the rise. I mean, we have more stuff to embrace now than we did 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And that's the best thing that you could ever ask for, I would think. It's coming full circle. It's going to come full circle. And it's going to come full circle. And everybody's going to love it. Why? Because, you know, because of the fact that people are gathering more information. Right?
Right.
People are gathering more information, which means that there's going to be more and more and more stuff.
It's going to be your understanding.
Right. There's no use for understanding. Don't try to understand it. Just be
we can understand it better.
Exactly. Understand it better. That's our motto. Understand it better, and then you might have a chance at understanding your kid. I guess that is, that's what we're saying, and how we're ending this podcast, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess, right? Is and that's really it. That's our podcast for tonight. And our newscast, right? So I guess all that's left to do is read the credits, right? This episode was produced by AMC Press & Co. Johnny DuBell is our sound wizard, and your hosts for the evening were myself, Red Hood, and John, who's stealing more violins, and Allison was absent. Though, Johnny was here, and he's getting ready with more sound equipment, aren't you, Johnny?
Yeah. Yeah, always working, that's what I said.
We're always working. Our drivers are stand and deliver. Our intern is deliverance is the key. His intern is... Declaration is even better. And Declaration even better's assistant is Forgetful Mike. Forgetful Mike's intern is useless. However, we aren't useless, and we can tell you that this show is produced by speaking to iPhones or any phone at all through the power of the internet. That's right. Fuck you, Ron Paul. Although this concludes our show for tonight, and please tune in with us tomorrow for more satire, same satire time, same satire podcast, and from the two of us to everybody out there. What do we say, guys? Oh, yeah. Good night.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody. See you tomorrow.